Bereishis chapter 6. So in this chapter, we're done with the list of 10 generations between Adam and Noach. So we got to Noach. As we see on the end of the last list, got to Noach, and I talked about Noach's name, which I think is a prefiguration of the story of the Mabul and Noach saving mankind in the Mabul or after the Mabul. So the chapter division started here. Vayikach Adam Noach, a new story. And this chapter is the chapter where the story of the Mabul starts already. It continues until when Noach listens or follows what God commanded him to make the Taiva and knowing that there's going to be a Mabul. There is a big question here about this division. So as everyone who read the Parsha of the Week knows, and anyone who follows the Parshas and the Sturim and other organizations, divisions here, knows in every other division besides for the chapters, the beginning of the story of Noach and of the Mabul does not start here. In the Parsha of the Week, it starts in the middle of this chapter, in the beginning where it says, Ela tell this Noach. And that is also, that's not only the Parsha of the Week, that's also, there's an internal logic and in what we talked about in the first class about the divisions the text itself gives us. One of the big divisions the text of Sefer Bereishis seems to give us, although it's less clear to me that we could really divide entire Bereishis under these headers. But there are 11 headers in Sefer Bereishis, each who start Ela told us. As we've noticed, the beginning of Bereishis doesn't have a header. And there's people that claim that we have to read the second chapter header as belonging to that. But in any case, it's not really correct to say that everything is under these headers. And some of them, if you actually divide the book only according to these headers, I don't think it entirely makes sense. But these are definitely headers and definitely meant to be beginnings of stories or beginnings of sections. And of course, that section begins in the beginning of Parshas Noach, the weekly Parsha Noach, and not in the beginning of the story. On the other hand, it seems to be very obvious, at least for parts of this story, that this is the beginning of the Mabul, especially the part starting with Vayar Hashem Ki Rabbi Ros Odom Be'oretz, which is explicitly referred to in the end of the Mabul after it says, and it says, which is definitely a reference to this pasuk. So in that sense, it seems clear that that's also the beginning. Also, the first three psukim, which talk about these nephilim, the bnei elohim, it's not clear what this is really referring to at all. But it seems reasonable to assume that since the Mabul is a reaction to some deterioration in what human activity and human action and becoming bad, this is very clearly a description of that, of how that happened or part of what that happened. It's a difficult section in general because nobody knows what Bnei Elohim and Nephilim literally are, although maybe this seems to be clear, if just the theological problems with it. But in any case, it's less clear that the connection of that to the Mabul, that the first three verses to the Mabul is less clear of, although it does seem to be reasonable to organize like that, and somewhat less reasonable to organize it under the previous chapter, which, as we discussed, has a very clear structure, and it sort of very clearly finishes with Noach. And actually, after the Mabul, we get some sort of continuation of what happened to Noach from when he was 500 years old, and then after that, up to Noach's death. So, to summarize, there's definitely a new beginning, a certain beginning in this story. It's also a style in which the Tanakh starts stories. Vayihi is one of the ways in which stories start. On the other hand, it's less clear that this is the beginning of the Mabul. I have organized it like this because I think that thematically it belongs here, and the chapters also, who generally look at the greater themes of things, did this this way. But there is a question about it, and all the other divisions seem to not work so well with that. Okay, but let's discuss first these two parts, and then we'll start the story of the Mabul. The first thing is there's a story, and now the story, and I will connect it to the Mabul somewhat. The story is that we have the story of man starting to multiply, right? We had one man, he gave birth to three children, but doesn't talk about, it says also that he has more children, but we don't have their names. And we assume that starting from one man and woman, slowly the people started to multiply, and it says, and that's where some stars problems began. And these problems seem to be specifically problems with this reproduction. So famously, anyone that knows human beings knows that human reproduction is fraught. There's a lot of dangers in it. There's a lot of ways in which it can go wrong. There's a lot of ways in which the strong drive of men specifically to women, of drive of men to reproduce in a certain sense, but also to take control of society through their conquering, so to speak, of women and through all of the things that go along with that, seems to be a large problem. And if we saw already in the first, that for that we don't need many people, right? For the first two brothers, just enough to have two people to have the problem of murder. And that's where we have the establishment of the discussion of murder. Of course, after the Mabul, there's also more talk of murder. So maybe in the story of the Mabul itself, it doesn't discuss murder, but seems to be a problem. As long as we have more than two people, maybe two people, it's not really enough to have the problem of znus. But when there's many people, and we're talking specifically about the social destruction that happens when people chase or conquer women in a way which is not conducive to social flourishing. And that's the story. There's children, there's people, many people, they have daughters. Of course, all men had daughters, but it means to say there are daughters and they're not entirely controlled, or they're not, there's somehow dear for the taking. Now there's something called Bnei Elohim. There's an ancient controversy about what this means, if it means literally children of the gods, or it means, which we would translate as angels, or it means just children of powerful people. For the purpose of the story, it's less of a difference, because it seems like the story has a moral problem with these beings or these people. It says the Bnei Elohim saw the daughters of man, that the Kitoiv is Haina, that they're good. Now, this is also an important thing to follow. There's this word Kitoiv. Kitoiv is, of course, what's said on the entire Shesh Smei Bereishis. And here, Kitoiv seems to have a slightly different meaning. Remember, Loitoiv Yasad Levade? And here, Kitoiv is Haina means just something like they were beautiful, right? They were good looking. And that's not exactly what Vayar Limus Kodesh Yosef Nitoiv might mean, right? It's not that God thought that the world was good looking. He thought it was good in a moral sense, right? In a good sense. And here, it's just Kitoiv. So there's a certain deterioration of what good means. And because they loved or they liked these women, they would take whoever they wanted. And Mekodesh HaMekodesh just should be read as whoever they wanted. And that's had the Pusik seems to have a moral criticism against this. And that's why I say it doesn't make a difference if the criticism is against angels or demigods or against human beings who have too much power. It seems to be the same problem. This is not the way, and we can understand ourselves, that society seems to break down when that happens. And then there's a response of God. V'yomer Hashem. Another pasuk that nobody really knows how to read. I think the most literal reading is, since at least the language, and again we could discuss theologically or metaphysically what this really means, but at least the language, which is that there is Bnei Elohim, there's some divineness or some godliness in these people. And there seems to be one of the important things, especially in these beginning stories of the story of the Tzadas, and maybe this story, I think, which connects to that, is that it's not good for humans to be divine in all ways. In some ways, maybe yes, but not in all ways. And one of the things that caused people being too divine or having too much power, you could say, is that these Bnei Elohim took whichever Bnei Sodom they wanted. You could call that rape. You could call that the destruction of society, which the Torah definitely wants to be based on some level of monogamy. So God says, my spirit will not, I think Yodin should be read as like lived or dwell in man forever, since he is flesh. And flesh is, of course, the opposite of God. Being flesh is talking about some weakness or some fleshy desires or something like that. And therefore, he will live 120 years. This is, of course, a reference also to the previous 10 generations who seem to have lived much more than 120 years. And it seems like those people might have been the same Bnei Elohim, I don't know, or some of their children, who have misused their power. And now we're limited human power. Similarly to how God limited humans' power, or Adam's power, to eat from the Etz HaChaim and to live forever, because that would not be good. And another way, he limited humans' power of living too long, and he made them live only 120 years. Of course, later it gets even more minimized, it seems to be. And now there's a third pasuk, which seems to be like a comment about this. It says, in those days, there were these things called Nephilim, and Nephilim are the result of this Bnei Elohim taking Bnei Sodom and having children with them. They have another two names, Giboirim, Anshei Hashem, the famous men of fame, men of name, and the Giboirim, the heroes, or the strong men. And it seems like this is like a comment saying that if you heard of Nephilim, and you will hear of it later in the Torah a lot more, and you will know that these are the products of this, and these are people who were famed for their strength and for their, I guess, for their longevity, which seems to be part of this story. And that's not good. And the story is telling about how that's not good and outlet the problems. Okay, so that's one thing. And it connects to the Mabul in not a very clear way. Of course, only in the sense that it seems like the Mabul, which is talks about the earth being destroyed, being corrupted, might be referring to this corruption, although it doesn't say clearly entirely what the corruption is. It does say Zima, which seems to refer to this or something like this. Okay, now we have verse number 2. And this verse is a short about the Mabul, however you read it, you caught up the story. The second story, not the second verse, the second part of this chapter is definitely about the Mabel. And it's definitely also a conversation I reference with the first, again, the Parshas Bereishis. It says, Vayar Hashem. So remember, Vayar Hashem, Eskel HaShosef, and Toiv Moed. Now, Vayar Hashem, that something that he created is not so Toiv Moed. There is something bad. There is great evil of the in earth. V'chol Yetz Mashav Sliba Rak Rakalim. He thinks bad all day. Or plans bad kol goy, and therefore Vayinochem Hashem, God regretted making man an earth, and Vayisatzev Eliba. Vayisatzev Eliba seems to mean something like the opposite of Toiv of Yarlem Eskoshet Toiv Moed. There's a discussion if Vayisatzev means something like what we call Etzev, which is sadness. I think that is the most literal meaning, and this is showing us that when it says Vayarlem Eskoshet Toiv Moed, that is another way of God saying I was happy, right? We would say I was happy, and how he was not happy. So he was sad, and therefore Vayemer Hashem, and he said, doesn't say who he said, I think he means that he said to himself, I will delete, right? I will destroy, I will wipe off man from the face of the earth. Adama, it says here, there's Adama and Oretz, which we should think about, and includes man. When he says man, it says from and this is another big question, what have the animals? But it seems like animals and all living things, just since the man is the controller, is sort of the king of all the animals. So when God is destroyed, man is destroyed, sorry, animals alone will destroy it because God has regretted for creating them. Okay, now we have, this is what brings us to Noach. The Noach motzachem b'nei Hashem, everything is bad, but Noach has found favor in the eyes of God. Doesn't say what the favor is, but the next pasuk explains to us. Ela tolis Noach. It starts the story of Noach. Noach was a tzaddik, tumim, in his generations, which we probably should read. Although he lived in his generations, and he walked with Hashem, he walked with Elohim, just like Hanoch. So again, that's something to say about how good a person is. He had three children, which you already know about from the previous chapter, Shem, Ham, and Yafes. And so this is probably why he found favor, because he was a tzaddik. And how do we know that he was a tzaddik? It doesn't say in what sense he was a tzaddik. We just assume that it means he didn't do whatever the other people did. And now again, the pasuk, this is, I think, why we should probably read this together with the beginning of the chapter, because it doesn't say what. It says the earth was corrupted in front of God. In other words, God saw it being corrupted. Of course, that was more explicit in the previous part of the chapter. It says God saw the earth. He saw the man being only evil. And God sees earth, and it's corrupted. Again, we have Bussa. Bussa meaning something like living flesh, has corrupted his ways on the earth. Again, these are less clear languages, probably idioms for something. Of course, most people read it as sexual corruption, and connecting it with the beginning of this chapter supports that reading. Although here it says Kol Bussa, not only the Bnei Elohim, so maybe. And slowly, entire society became corrupted. Okay, now, and this is the last major part of this chapter, and we have to somehow, after in the next class, I guess, organize all of these chapters, because the story of the Mabel is quite complicated and long, and seems to go back and forth and repeat itself or have many details. But now we have, and I think this next piece is some very clear display of what it means to be a tzaddik. At least for this story of Noach, the kind of tzaddik that Noach was, and Esolim is Halech Noach. Because what we have is the first instance in the Torah, and we will find this many, many times, especially by Moshe, even already by Avram, and especially by the stories of creating the Mishkan, but in many other stories, we have this structure, which I call a mitzvah and a kiyum. God commands something, and the man who was commanded does it. And this is the first time we have it. Of course, we had Cheres Mebereish, but there was nobody to really follow it. It just happened that it, so to speak, the reality has to listen to God. But here we have a man who could not listen, like the other people seem to have not listened, or there was nobody to talk to. And Noach is listened to. So, and at the end of the chapter, and this is literally the language, it's the same double language, which the P kind of stories always have. And it starts and also has a tendency to start and end the pasuk with the same word. So, it starts with Asiya and ends with Asiya. This is a stylistic thing of, especially the kind of what people call priestly chapters or priestly paragraphs, and that's the first. And this also, this Umar va'usa, this God saying, being commanded, and the man listening or carrying out what he was commanded. That's also a structure, a very tight structure, which is something that very much defines this kind of style in the Torah. So now we have a long speech of God to Noach, and this long speech includes both what God said seemingly to himself only before, which is that he wants to destroy the earth. And why? There's slightly more details. It includes, secondly, a solution for Noach to create a taiva, which will save him from the waters, and explains how, why it will save him, because it will bring water to destroy the earth, and this will save him. And thirdly, it includes the promise called Hakamas Bris, again, the first promise, meant first bris made between God and a man in history, which is that he will be saved, and he will also save some of each animal along with him, and they will have food to eat. That's the basic story. And this speech that God gives Noach includes basically the whole story of the Mabul already, from beginning to end, both from what happened, what was the plan, how Noach would be saved, and how there would be a promise to him. It might be speaking about the promise or the bris, the covenant that was made later. It might be saying, it might be like prefiguring that, or it might be saying that there's a covenant now, just in the fact that he's telling him to build a taiva. I think it's probably prefiguring what will be later, because this is the style of doing things, of like saying a big speech that includes everything, and then Noach just follows the whole thing. And in some sense, the rest of the story is just the unfolding of this speech. So let's say some of the details of the speech. The first part is what happened. Kites Kalbosabalafana, the end of all flesh became from me. And the end, I think, has the meaning, and this might also be the meaning of Rabros Odem Boretz, which is that things have overflowed. So there's like a limit, what's called in Gemara, the smallest osam. Like there's a limit to how much evil you can do until you get kicked out, until you get destroyed. You can do it for one generation, for two, for three, or maybe one person, two person, the same person, many. At some point, there's an end. Things can't go on forever, and this is also how nature works. Things can't go on forever. The earth is full of something called chamas, which again, it seems to be an idiom for something. People think it means stealing and financial crime. Might be more than that, and therefore the earth will be destroyed. That's part one. Part two, it tells Noach how to build a taiva. And now, another thing which is specific to this kind of parshas, which is it gives the exact measurements and the exact way to make the taiva. You should make it kinim, whatever that means. You should cover it up with koifer, which means pitch or a kind of tar. We assume that that's for the water, not to walk into it. It has measurements, 300 amas long, 50 amas wide, 30 amas tall. This is supposed to give an impression of something very big. And it should have something called a tzoyar, which might mean something like a window, not clear. We know later that there was a window, so maybe it's about that. It has some kind of instruction for the style. It should be finished to an amma. I think that probably means that the roof should be slanted, so the water should drop off of it. There should be a door on the side, which is a very logical thing to make a boat. You don't want the door on the top, because then the water will go into it. And it should have three levels. That's the instructions for building the taiva. Then there is, what will God do? What actually does this mashchisa mas'oretz mean? I'll bring something called a mabul. Of course, mabul is another word not defined. The pasuk might be interpreting itself by saying mayim, mabul of water, and this will destroy kol basar shebar chayim, all living flesh, and everything will die. But, and now the next important part is, and we should read a but here, but with you I will create or stand up, create my covenant, and you will come to taiva, you, your children, your wife, children's wives, and you will bring along two from each animal, a male and female, so they could survive from each kind of animal. And it goes through the kinds of animals we learned in Bereshis Perek Aleph, Oif Behem Eremes Adama. And you will take along food, as we have in the end of Bereshis Perek Aleph, that each animal and man has food given to them to eat, and it's implied, and therefore you'll survive. And that's the end. And then Noach does what he was commanded to do.